Cocoa Beach is turning 100, and you're invited to the celebration. Join Cocoa Beach downtown on July 5th and 6th for a weekend full of live entertainment, family-friendly activities, and special events honoring a century of history. Best of all, it's free and open to the public. Come celebrate 100 years of Cocoa Beach and make some new memories of your own. Learn more at LegendaryCocoaBeach.com. That's LegendaryCocoaBeach.com.
A healthy pregnancy starts with prenatal care. The Florida Department of Health in Miami-Dade County offers regular checkups to help protect you and your baby from complications like high blood pressure, infections, and preterm labor. Our services include physical exams, screenings, ultrasounds, and postpartum care, including family planning. Call 305-575-3800 or visit miamidade.floridahealth.gov to see if you qualify. Prioritize your health and your baby's. Start today.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
You just found the most downloaded fitness, health, and entertainment podcast. This is Mind Pump. In today's episode, we had live callers call in. We got to help them out on air, but that was after our intro. Today's intro is 54 minutes long. Now, in the intro, we talk about studies on fitness, fat loss, muscle gain. We talk about supplements. It's a good time. By the way, if you want to be on an episode like this where you can call in, email us your question at live@mindpumpmedia.com. Now, this episode is brought to you by some sponsors. The first one is ButcherBox. They deliver quality meats to your door. If you like protein, but you like healthy protein like grass-fed beef, go to ButcherBox. Go to butcherbox.com/mindpump. On that link, you'll get $20 off your first box, plus you'll get free chicken breast, ground beef, or salmon included in every box for free for an entire year. This episode is also brought to you by Ned, makers of full-spectrum hemp oil extract products. Cannabinoids have some interesting benefits. Ned is the best. Go check them out. Go to helloned.com/mindpump. So that's HelloNed.com/mindpump. Use the code mindpump, get 20% off. By the way, we're releasing a brand new MAPS program called MAPS Longevity. It includes everything you need to do to improve your health span. And because it's a new program, it's discounted, plus some free stuff is available. Go to MAPSLongevity.com. Use the code 50LONG. Get $50 off, plus free access to our private forum for an entire year and more. This offer expires on the 22nd.
T-shirt time! And it's t-shirt time.
Shit, Doug. You know it's my favorite time of the week.
We have two winners this week. Two for Facebook, none for Apple. The Facebook winners are Scott Bischke and Justin Dugas. Both of you are winners. Send the name I just read to iTunes@mindpumpmedia.com. Include your shirt size and your shipping address, and we'll get that shirt right out to you.
All right, let's talk about the top five most controversial fitness tips, the truths, the falsities, the pros and the cons. Let's get into it.
Yeah.
I looked up what the top five most controversial fitness tips were, and they're pretty accurate. I agree with the list that I got. And what I thought when I saw them, of course, it's like, oh, I'm going to just break them all apart and dispel them all. But it's like, why do they exist and why do they stick around? And that's because there are some...
You can make a case for some of them.
There's some perceivable... benefits, or they stick around for a reason. In other words, right? Like, why are they sticking around for so long?
And or they can work, just not ideal,
right? Or maybe not the way you think they're going to work. Right?
Small window.
So I'll start with the first one, which is extreme calorie restriction as a way to lose weight quickly. This, you know, where this exists.
I'm actually surprised that you searched this and this came up as controversial.
Yeah,
I mean, I agree with this, but I wouldn't have thought that. Google or ChatGPT would have spit that out for you.
Yeah, so it's controversial because fitness professionals will say, like, don't do this. But you know who promotes this the most? You guys know this. If you think hard enough, you'll remember. Who are the clients that struggled where you had to debate this the most? Where they'd come to you and they'd say, my doctor put me on this.
Getting ready for your...
Yeah, they have clinics to support this.
Extreme calorie restriction, actually, this is the most damaging. It gets promoted by the medical community oftentimes. And they're typically like these shake diets where they're eating, you know, 700 or 1,000 calories a day, which I don't know if anyone's still doing it. But
yeah, they still exist. I mean, I think here's the – the logic behind that is you have somebody who's morbidly obese, who is at high risk in so many categories. And it's like, we just need to get weight off of this person as fast as possible. Right. And so we are going to put them on the most restrictive, low calorie situation that we possibly can, because it's live or die. And we've scared them into that. And so that was the strategy. The thought process.
I know that's what they would say, but I had enough clients that were not in that situation.
No, I agree. So that's how it's been promoted in the medical industry. But I got a lot of clients that would sit across from me and I'd be like, really?
Yeah. You're not, you're not 200 pounds overweight or 100 pounds overweight. Yeah. You need to lose 30 pounds.
Right.
No. And the way that they'll back it up is they'll show the data and they'll show, well, here's a study sample of X amount of people who was on a 1,000-calorie diet. And what we see are, you know, improvements in triglycerides, improvements in other blood lipids, you know, blood pressure drop. Therefore, this is an effective, viable intervention. And no, it's not, because the fail rate on diets are terrible. The fail rate on this kind of a diet is 100%. Like, you go extreme calorie restriction, will you see weight loss? Of course you will. Will you see blood lipid improvements? In many cases, you will. What are the odds that this is going to lead to worse outcomes later on? 100%. So this is why I would never promote something like this.
So, okay. So I do want to do this for the audience, because I'm looking ahead at the all five of them you have on here. And I can also make a case where I would do this, or I would accept to do this.
So that's what I was hoping.
Okay.
Yes.
So every one of these, that's to me why it's controversial, because there is a scenario where I'd be like, okay, that's fine.
That's
for example, extreme calorie restriction. Well, I think that someone like any of you sitting in here right now, putting you on a 1 week 500 calorie diet would not be a bad thing whatsoever.
Right.
I mean, just for 1 week. 1 week, we're going to fasting mimicking diet.
That's right. Yeah.
And you know, during that process, we're going to break those chains to some of your bad food behaviors. You're going to focus on spiritual meditation, whatever, name the thing. But we are not doing this as a, you know, oh, we're going to lose 30 pounds in next, you know, whatever.
That's right.
It's a, hey, we're going to interrupt your current, you know, eating patterns and lifestyle right now. Mm-hmm. And I used to do this with competitors that I sensed were borderline orthorexic, where they were just so...
They were afraid of skipping a meal
and not weighing out doing it. I'm like, oh, I'm going to disrupt the shit out of this. Watch this. You're not going to eat... you're only going to eat this many calories for the next...
Break your attachments.
Yes.
That's right.
So I can see cases, and obviously fasting is an example of this.
That's right.
A three-day fast. We've promoted that before, where we've done that at the start of a month or whatever. So there are examples where I could see each one of these things. Okay, I could use it for this. Problem with it is it becomes a strategy for people to lose, you know, a little bit of belly
fat. Extreme calorie restriction and fasting is almost never promoted the way you said it.
Yeah.
It's almost always promoted as a fast way to lose body fat or weight. This is a fast way that you lose weight. It's very effective. And the reason why people are pulled to it is when you finally reach that place where you're like, I'm going to do something about my weight, you're willing to do almost anything, especially if you're hating yourself in that moment. Like, this is, I can't stand this. I'm whatever. I'm gross or whatever. And then someone says to you, you're just going to take two shakes a day and eat nothing for the next 2 weeks. And they're like, done. I'm going to do that because I just want to change this as quickly as possible. So that's the allure. But the actual benefits are really more from a like changing your relationship to food standpoint. Now, obviously, if you've had eating disorder issues in the past, it's a terrible option.
Terrible, yeah.
This is called starving yourself. But if you're like I was, where for years I ate every 2 hours for fear of losing a pound of muscle.
Obsessed with not eating.
There's also the rare case for disease and medical intervention they actually promote this as a way to come in before like a chemo treatment or before, you know, you get aggressive in that direction. But yeah, for your average person and thinking this is an option for just losing weight and body fat, not a great.
The first medical application for fasting was actually done, I want to say, in ancient Greece. There were writings about fasting to cure seizures. They actually found that when people fasted who had epilepsy, and they didn't know that it was ketones and whatever, that it actually was a one of their treatments for it. That was the first medical application for it. But fasting has existed for thousands of years, and it was always in a spiritual context. It was never like, you're going to do this to lose weight.
No.
You know, type of deal. Next is HIIT cardio.
I even liked that this guy landed on here. I wouldn't have thought this
would land on here. HIIT got on there?
Yeah, it's still super popular.
Is this Google or ChatGPT? Which one did you use to
Gronk.
Oh, Gronk.
Yeah,
I forgot Gronk. You're Gronk.
Yeah,
so that's interesting.
Yeah, and HIIT cardio is controversial for a couple different reasons. One, a short stint of HIIT cardio will burn as many calories as a longer stint of other forms of exercise. So it becomes this allure of I could do less work and get the same benefit. Now, of course, the caveat is it's hard as hell. So HIIT is intense versus less intense forms of exercise. But here's the controversy. It's not appropriate for a lot of people. And in fact, it can be counterproductive for a lot of people. So I don't care what the data says, because the data tends to take college age males and whatever. But when you look at the average person, like I can't think of a client. I can think of a few clients, but most of the clients that I started training, I didn't have them do HIIT until way later.
Well, there's a lot of prerequisites that just aren't discussed. Yes. Like it's promoted because of the study that shows XYZ and all the benefits, but to get there's a process to get there. And even then there's a limited amount of time where the effectiveness outweighs the risk.
There's only a short period of time where it's extremely effective for fat loss. Mm-hmm. So it's not a sustainable strategy. Where I would use this. So I used this when I was getting ready for stage. So when I was 4 weeks out, I would introduce 12 minutes of HIIT cardio post lifting days.
Right.
And I only did that for the last couple weeks leading up for a show. And the reason why that was because it was a novel stimulus. I knew that I didn't do that ever. And it's like, okay, this is a great way for me to ramp up the calorie burn for this short period of time. Mm-hmm. And while it's a novel stimulus, my body's going to respond and hopefully burn body fat, right? In an effective way too, because I don't want to do long durations of cardio because I want to preserve as much muscle mass as possible. So, and this is what the studies will talk about is these short 6 to 8 week studies where it's great at preserving muscle and burning body fat, but in these short windows. So as a strategy in a short window, where somebody who's metabolically healthy and fit makes sense. Doing it as a long-term strategy all the time that, it's a great way to burn fat. It's like, no.
That's one of the most abused forms of cardio for the average person is what you tend to see. When you're doing something hard, your technique needs to be that much better than when you're doing something at an easier pace. So when you have somebody who is getting into exercise and they're on a treadmill and their form is a little off, you push them hard, the form is way off. This is where injury starts to happen. So that's number one. Number two, the average person who's pursuing health and fitness, it's a delicate balance between too much stress and the right amount of stress that's going to produce change. Walking, the reason why I love walking so much is you're probably not going to hurt yourself. Your technique's fine. You still walk. People still walk every day. And number two, it's actually, in many cases, recuperative and regenerative. Yeah. So when I'm taking a client and I'm looking at their stress bucket, I'd like to use up that stress bucket for strength training, not for other forms of, unless they're an endurance athlete, which is totally different. But I'm trying to use that stress bucket up for strength training because that's going to give them the kind of changes that they're looking for. And then the additional activity, I'm like, let's do something that's actually going to not contribute to stress and actually will help facilitate recovery and help alleviate some of your stress, which is walking. Yeah. So that's the one that we recommend most. Yeah. And it's very sustainable. Next is keto or low carb or no carb diets. They're best for fat loss. You still have lots and lots of people that preach ketogenic or no carbohydrate diets for fat loss. There's a couple of reasons why. One, you do get more weight loss in the short period of time than you will with other calorie matched diets. It's not body fat though.
It's water.
It is water loss, but people like the scale going down. So this keeps it popular.
And you have to contend for the rebound.
That's right. Number two, black and white diets in the short term. People love that. Like if I could give someone like one or two rules to follow, people, they flock to that because it's like, it's not like when I say eat a balanced diet and eat healthy, be like, what does that look like? I don't know what to do. If I'm like, don't eat carbs, like done. I'm just going to follow that. So that's also why it tends to be popular. And then the third reason for people who actually feel good on low carbohydrate or ketogenic diets, which there are people that feel good doing this, it's the ketones. And they probably had some issues with glucose, with breaking down carbohydrates or insulin sensitivity, in which case it may be a good option. But long term, it's no more effective than any other diet. And I would argue it's too restrictive for most people to live in a normal life.
That's the main reason. So
flexible.
Very similar to the HIIT cardio, this was something as a strategy that was used towards the end of a prep for a show. I knew that if I ate mostly high carbohydrate through most of the prep, And then as I got in, heading into the showtime, those couple weeks of doing all this stuff, cutting down on the carbohydrates was a quick way to drop weight and water weight leading into the show. But the thing that like I could never do long, and I try to do it like just for overall health. I remember when we talked about it years ago on the show, it's just so restrictive. So to live that way and to think that, you know, you're going to consistently, and you have to understand too that
eating healthy is restrictive enough.
Well, and here's another level. I think the thing that people don't take into consideration also is when you do restrict from carbs for a long period of time and then you reintroduce them, you're very sensitive.
Super.
So the thing, so it's like, okay, if you really believe I'm never going to have chips, ice cream, any sort of carbohydrates,
no tortillas, no grains, no
like,
potato.
I'm going to cut that out for the rest of my life and I like it, I feel good, it's manageable, I'll do it forever, great. But if you think you're good at doing that for weeks or a few weeks or a month at a time, and then you go off, like when you go off, you're so sensitive to it that the rebound effect is far worse.
It kicks up your appetite like crazy.
Oh, yeah.
And then you suck up all that water that was out of your body, and people freak out on a keto diet when they'll have one day of eating out and they're like, how did I gain seven pounds? Like,
all these pounds of fat.
Yeah, back. It's water. But that's not good for health relationship. It can turn into one that's not so great. By the way, this is coming from someone who feels great on a ketogenic diet. I'm not on a ketogenic diet all the time because it is so restrictive, even though I feel generally best eating a very low.
I love it for lowering inflammation and the cognitive effects of it. So I mean, there's a place for it, but to be confined for a long period of time, not a good
idea. And then athletic performance, this is just, I hate it when keto zealots debate this. It's like there's zero data that supports athletic performance is the same on a ketogenic diet. Maybe low steady state, like yes, that's true. Like,
and even
like hiking,
and even those guys, like the Zach Bitters of the world, right, who are world record holders for the long distance running. They will stay keto, and then when the actual day comes of
they have carbs.
Yep. And he doesn't need a lot of carbs because he's so sensitive to them. Yep. So his body then utilizes them really rapidly, quick, right? So I think there's definitely benefits to this, but long-term wise, unless you're somebody with a rare thing like Michaela Peterson, where you're just debilitated.
Yeah, autoimmune issues for sure.
Yes, that makes sense.
Next up is spot reduction. So this is the idea that I could target a part of my body, train that part of my body, and burn body fat from that part of my body. In other words, I got belly fat, so I'm going to do exercise for my core. Or I got body fat on my thighs, I'm going to work out my lower body, and it's going to burn body fat from my thighs. Now, this has been studied so many times. This is not how your body burns body fat. It's a systemic fat loss that happens, dictated by genetics. However, here's why this doesn't go away. Because you could spot develop.
Yes.
So if you train an area, unless there's tons of body fat on it, but if there's some body fat on a particular and you train it and you develop muscle there, it looks leaner. It looks leaner because the muscle underneath it is more sculpted, it's stronger, it's more developed. So you look in the mirror and go, they said spot reduction was a myth, but man, my legs look way leaner. When you have muscle underneath body fat, you look leaner. Look at somebody with developed arms. They could have higher body fat on their arms, but their arms still look more muscular than somebody who has very little muscle on the arms.
And even the abs, I mean, aside from somebody who's carrying, 30, 40 pounds of body fat, but if you're relatively lean, you're in the teens, right? Somewhere between 10 and 18% body fat, and you develop your abs,
You'll see them more.
And so therefore you'll look leaner there, but you certainly are not losing body fat in that area. That's not why they look that way. It's because your muscles have grown there just like anywhere else.
Yeah. Now here's the other reason why this one sticks around. Men and women, both experience this, but women in particular experience this, that they'll suddenly notice that their body stores body fat differently. Mm-hmm. Now, I remember, and I apologize to all my early female clients, because I was taught this. I was taught, it's your genetics, it's all in your head. And yet women, and they would be told by the doctor, they'd go to the doctor and be like, I never stored body fat in my midsection. I never stored body fat like this before. I don't know what's going on. I'm doing what I used to do before, and suddenly my body looks different. And they would all be told, oh, you're just overeating, you're not counting your calories properly, or something changed or whatever. No, the truth is
hormone profile.
Their hormones changed, and your hormones will change how you store body fat. And going through perimenopause, menopause will do this. But also men and women, if you're under a lot of stress, prolonged periods of time, chronic, and you're not handling it well for whatever reason, visceral body fat increases and belly fat goes up. And this will happen for both men and for women. So hormone changes will change how you store body fat. And I think this contributes to this myth of spot reduction, because they'll sure say, yeah, oh no, this is where I'm storing body fat, and I never have before. So yeah. Lastly, that supplements are game changers. The thing that's missing that is going to make a huge difference in my fat loss or muscle gain, or it's going to change how I look or feel in big dramatic ways, is this supplement or this stack of supplements or this bottle of pills or whatever. That's just false, period, end of story. There is truth, however, in filling a nutrient deficiency. That is a game changer. If you lack a nutrient like vitamin D, magnesium, iodine, zinc, selenium, you know, iron, these are all common ones, B vitamins, and then you suddenly supplement with that nutrient, you feel so different that it's like your whole life changed. Mm. Those are the single cases where supplements are, in fact, game changers.
Yeah. I think that's one of the two reasons why it's so pervasive in our space. I think the other reason is because for the longest time, the way you made money in the fitness industry is selling supplements.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
There's just not a lot of money anywhere else other than getting people to buy supplements every single month. So unfortunately, a lot of the research, a lot of the studies, a lot of the conversations that fitness people have are geared around supplements because it's their number one way to make money. And that's the unfortunate part, is it's talked about way too much. To your point, yes, if you are deficient in something, that it's common, like vitamin D, magnesium, you name it, and you supplement for it, it absolutely can make a huge difference on all things, sleep, building muscle, all the
hormones,
above.
Hormones, health. Hormones,
yeah, so that game changer for that person who is deficient in something. But as far as all your performance supplements, even the greatest ones like creatine that we talk about, is amazing. It's amazing as far as in the context of supplements aren't amazing. And so it actually does something. That's why that's the thing that I think people need to understand, is like, because we talk a lot about how great creatine is, and creatine is so great, but in the context of most supplements are shit. And so it's the top of the shit pile. It's like most everything doesn't move the needle, doesn't do anything, but actually creatine does do something. Therefore it's amazing and it's the best. But we have too many conversations in our space around all this stuff, because when we look back, and I mean, between the three of us, we've helped thousands of people. I've never had someone's life that I've changed or got in incredible shape and went, man, that supplement stack we did, sure glad we did that, right?
Like,
never, not once, no. Not one time. And so, and I mean, even at the highest level of competing, yes, I was on hormone therapy while I competed, but supplements weren't even a major part, even of my regimen, to compete at the highest level. It's like, I'm not.
You know what's funny? The people that know this the most are actually bodybuilders who take steroids and growth hormone or whatever. Yeah. They actually laugh at supplements because, and it's funny because they'll take anything that'll give them an edge.
They'll take all the things and then promote one supplement like it's a factor.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. To Adam's point, if you were to compile every article, social media post, every YouTube video, every clip around health and fitness, a disproportionate percentage of them would be dedicated to supplements.
For sure.
So it's distorted. The view is distorted precisely because the information that's coming out is geared in that way. So if we were to get the right amount of supplement articles that actually correlated to how much they help, 1-2% of everything you ever read or will read in fitness and health would be around supplements. Literally 1-2% of every article would be that. Everything else would be on the stuff they can't sell. Sleep, training, and diet.
Yeah. To me, of all the ones we have right now, this is the one that drives me crazy. I mean, and I don't know about you guys, but my family has known what we've done for a decade, right?
They always ask you about something.
Yeah, very, very aware of the conversations we have on here, how big the podcast is, how influential, how much experience we have. And it's crazy that if I get a text message from a brother-in-law, sister, brother, anybody,
same here.
It is a, hey, what do you think about this? Yeah. It's never like, It's never diet related, exercise related. It's never any of the big rocks. It's always, what do you think of this? Yeah. And I get a screenshot of some bullshit supplement with some article. And I'm just like, fuck, it's so crazy that you are related to me. And I've been preaching this for 10 years. I don't know how many hours of content out there. And we've been touting this forever that it doesn't do shit. Yet that is still what I'll get from own family.
You know what the problem is that we also have a medical industry that is heavily, obviously largely funded by drugs. And in some cases, they're life-changing, absolute life-changing. In many cases, if you were to apply the lifestyle changes that would contribute to feeling better and compare it to the drug, it kicks the crap out of it. Like you take, for example, one of the most widely prescribed category of pharmaceuticals are antidepressants. It's like very widely prescribed. But if you took, and except for extreme cases and whatever, but if you took most people on them and you change their lifestyle, added exercise, change their diet, better sleep, it would destroy what the drugs do. But the drugs are a pill and they're easy and they make a lot of money.
Right.
And so again, you get this kind of distorted view of how effective, and those are drugs, by the way. Supplements aren't even in that category. It's like that's like 10 levels lower than effectiveness when it comes to that.
I mean, I've always thought too, like you've heard me communicate this a bunch of times on here, is that, you know, if you have disposable income, then why not? I mean, it helps. It's adding to the thing, but it's like, it's not moving the needle and it shouldn't be the main thing you're focusing on or asking questions about.
By the way, we're sponsored by supplement companies and we're telling you this.
Yeah. So. And take them all, right? We all mess around with all of them. And I think that's kind of how I feel. Like it's like, it's more fun than it is like banking on it's going to move the needle. It's like, oh, this is cool. I need to sleep better. I'm going to take this. Or, oh, hey, this is cool. I need a little extra energy today. Yeah. I'm going to take this. I'm going to do that. Or it's not like, man, I got to make sure I get that so I can build that muscle and burn that body fat. It's like, no, never once do I approach supplements like that.
Hey, I got to talk to you guys about the trends in strength training. So we've all seen this, right? We've been touting the benefits of strength training since we were trainers in the late 90s, early 2000s. And it's always been one of the primary forms of exercise for personal trainers. But it was always a discussion. It was always like we had to sell it, especially to women. A lot has changed around the attitudes around strength training. So I looked up, and I actually saved some notes. I looked up the trends over just the last 10 years when it comes to strength training. And it's pretty awesome. It's pretty awesome. So
elaborate a little bit on what you mean by that. Like, cause I'm trying to guess right now where you're
like participation, like when they do polls, how gyms are building themselves, what their members are using.
So for example, like a trend that we've seen in the last decade is the amount of squat racks would be a growing trend.
Are you specifically talking about barbell training or, you know, like free weights versus machines?
Just strength just training in general. I don't think we have studies.
Another big trend that we've seen happen just in the short period of time we've even been doing this is, remember how nobody had like turf in their gyms now, like every gym has turf.
Yeah. So gyms looks radically different
from
when I was a trainer in the late 90s. But so check this out. So this is from 2015 to 2024. That's the best data that we have. In 2015, 11% of the population engaged in strength training. A recent survey shows that it's 29%.
What year did you say that again? When was it?
10 years ago, 2015 to now.
Because I remember.
So that's more than doubled.
One of my furthest memory back of working for the company. Okay, so I'm 21 years old or so, like this, and it was. And we used to talk about this, how much opportunity there was to help people and stuff. We were penetrating 4%.
Oh, I remember that.
4%. So 10 years ago. What is it now?
Oh, I said almost 30%.
Wow.
We do strength training 2 days a week. That's what it says.
Wow.
That's a big percentage. IHRSA, which is the International Health and Racquetball Sports Association, it's like an association of gyms and fitness facilities, shows that in 2023, they saw a 39% increase from 10 years ago who are doing strength training. So that's awesome.
Wow.
And the trends suggest continued growth. 5 to 10% it's continued.
Haven't memberships gone up too? I know that was like it decimated through COVID, but then it's really started to pick back
well,
up.
Well, this is also why all the stats point to personal training as a career option is incredible.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of people thought or think that the introduction of, you know, GLP-1s or the popularity of those would kill that. And I think it's the opposite.
It's doing the opposite.
I think it's only going to accelerate the opportunity for coaches and trainers in this field. So it is a pretty cool career opportunity right now with the duration
we're going. It's been a great career opportunity for 30 years, if you look at the growth. Mm-hmm. It's been growing year over year, faster than almost any other industry. You know, yeah, it's amazing. So here's one of my favorite stats. In 2015 to now, the hashtags revolving around strength training, so like strength training, powerlifting, there was about 40,000 posts that would use hashtags like that. In 2024, it's 2.5 million posts. Whoa. So a huge increase in social media posts revolving around strength training, which is really cool. And then gym footprints have changed dramatically. They now shift their footprints away from
What about total gyms in the US today versus say 20 years ago?
That's a good question. You know what the problem with that is? I guarantee that the COVID killed
dramatically reduced.
Yeah, the numbers, so you probably see a huge drop.
I mean, they definitely thinned the herd for sure.
Yeah.
But even then, we had such a massive boost because of the explosion of CrossFit, because those were popping up every other place. I mean, for a decade.
But you got to imagine so many of them shut their doors.
They did. I remember I think we talked about the stats on the show when we were going through COVID, how many were shutting down. There was quite a bit. But I still would imagine it's still a dramatic increase from just to say a decade or two ago.
Probably. Yeah. The irony that we had a health epidemic and the thing that got destroyed the most was the best place to go.
Sad.
To become healthy.
No.
I know, wild. My favorite studies on that, by the way. They did studies on this, and you can find them. The last place where you would catch COVID was actually a gym.
No.
It was one of the last. It's funny, they kept them closed the longest. Why? Because people don't go to the gym.
Healthy people congregate in one place.
Yeah. Well, no, you don't go to the gym when you're sick, except for the like fitness, you know, maniacs. Like
that one guy. Yeah.
But even I wouldn't go when I had a fever. You know. Yeah. So I love that. I love it. Anyway, I watched such a good movie the other night. Have you guys seen Cabrini?
I haven't seen it yet. It's on my list.
What is that?
Oh,
it's the nun. It's the nun one, right?
Oh God. So she was canonized as a saint by the Catholic Church. I think she was the first American saint, but she was this nun who had this strong conviction to go help the poor. And she actually went to the Pope, finally got to the Pope, and she's like, send me to China. And the Pope is like, no, you're crazy. He goes, I'll tell you what. And she's like super persistent. And he's like, I tell you what, why don't you start in America? And if you do well there, then I'll let you go to other places. So he sent her, and this was the early 1900s, to the Five Points in New York City, which I don't know if you guys are familiar, but in the early 1900s, Italians were the main immigrants, and most of the Italians that came were poor, they were uneducated, many of them come from southern Italy, and it was like dangerous and terrible, and there were a lot of orphans, lots of orphans.
Was this the Bill the Butcher kind of era?
Yes.
Yeah.
So she goes there.
Is that the New York fights? Is that
movie? Gangs in New York. Gangs in New York? That's the Five Points.
Okay.
Yeah. And I mean, it was really bad. Like murders.
Is that depicted?
It was brutal.
Yes. So,
really?
Yeah.
I thought that was so Hollywooded up. That's like depicted.
Oh, Gangs in New York?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that a lot of that was dramatized.
Yeah, of course it was. Sure, of course it's somewhat, but is it like somewhat accurate? I mean, because even if it's like remotely accurate, that's crazy.
You look up, and because I did this, I kind of went down a rabbit hole, and early 1900s, Five Points, it was like prostitution, you know, people dying, no hospitals, orphans that were just living on their own on the streets because mom and dad died. They don't have anywhere to go. Then they go live
survival.
And then the little girls would be turned into prostitutes up until whatever. It was just terrible, terrible, terrible. So here goes this nun, and she goes there with a group of nuns. It's just a group of these women. And they go there with basically nothing to go save these orphans. And the story is absolutely incredible. Like, I mean, the courage,
90% on Rotten Tomatoes.
The courage that she had to do what she did to go out there was just, and by the way, it ended up turning into, because at that point there was no female or nun-led like ministry in that way. Back then it was like priests that would do it. hers turned into the largest that they ever had. And it spread all over. So if you ever see a school or a hospital or anything that's Cabrini, it's named after her.
Okay.
And what she did. So good.
Cool. I'm laughing because how different of content we're watching
right now. You're watching
Mobland. I'm into Mobland right now. We're chainsawing bodies. That is great. Gangsters are killing people just to make a point.
No, bro.
Hey, Doug turned me on to it. Doug's always got good recommendations. I always hit him up when I find something that I know I really like because we have similar taste. And I was turning him on to Department Q on Netflix, which I'm always surprised if I find something on Netflix. I think Netflix is, for all most the part, trash. Yeah. And every once in a while, they have a decent series. Department Q was really good. And he's like, "Had you seen Mobland yet?" And I was like, "No, I didn't." I had to get Paramount or something like that. It's another one of the.
I think it's Amazon.
Yeah, you need to buy it though. Paramount. Yeah, it's through Paramount. So if you don't own Paramount, you have to buy it through Amazon. Anyways. Really good. It's got Tom Hardy. It's got Pierce Bronson.
Dude, he's a badass jiu-jitsu fighter, by the way. Have you seen him in tournaments? Hardy?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, I heard. Yeah, he's pretty good.
Oh,
yeah.
And he plays a badass. Yeah. He is the main mobster's, like, you know, what do you call those guys? Like
Fixer.
There you go. He's like the fixer, and he plays that role.
Enforcer or whatever.
So good. So good. Dude, so if you guys haven't watched that,
Scene, by the way, Cabrini's very historically accurate. There's this part where because back then people were very like racist against Italians, and there was like the wealthy part of New York, and she was banned from trying to get money from wealthy non-Italian, from anybody who was wealthy, but definitely anybody who was non-Italian. The Pope literally told her, or no, her cardinal said, "You can get money, but only from Italians." She's like, "So you want me to get money for poor people from poor people?" And he's like, "Yeah, that's all you can do." So she was really smart. She went to the New York Times, I think it was, and brought one of the reporters to the Five Points. And he wrote a very famous article, which was something like, "Rats live better than these people do." Uh-huh. And that article stirred up so much and got them so much
interesting.
Money. She got in trouble for it, but she's like, "Well, you didn't tell me it couldn't go."
You know,
which I thought was so cool.
Since we're sharing things that we're watching right now, because I did my question the other day, somebody's asking me about reading, and I'm not reading right now, or at least not that much. And I'm watching a lot of things. And one of the things I went down the rabbit hole is Alex Hormozi has this series on YouTube, and it's kind of Shark Tank-esque, or I don't know what maybe you would compare that to, Doug. Like, but what he does is he takes somebody, and they're typically people that have a somewhat successful business already. They're already deep into six figures. Mm-hmm. Some of them are even like $1 million or whatever, like that revenue, but they're not big businesses. They're private small businesses that are trying to scale, and they're stuck or they're losing money. Mm-hmm. And he basically does this like 50-minute deep dive in front of you on their business. And it's really, really good. I mean, very informative and all different, like across the spectrum of like,
so totally entrepreneur should watch.
Yeah. So if you like business, you like entrepreneur stuff. I mean, I've learned a lot just from sitting down and watching a few of those where he does a really good analysis of someone's business. And in 50 minutes, he like fixes these people's businesses, and it's pretty cool.
That's awesome.
To watch. So if you like content like that, I don't know what the name of it is. I'm sure if you did Hormozi fix Google or search on YouTube, Hormozi business, something like that, it'll pop up. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's got a whole playlist of them.
So I got to ask you guys a question, because I just read an alarming study. I don't chew gum. I never chew gum, but do you guys chew gum? Is that a thing that you guys
do? I go in phases. I'm not right now, but I normally do.
It's available, which is like never. So okay.
I told you what happened with my son. We gave it to him, and then we found out that was messing up his stomach and everything like that. That was pretty stupid of me. I didn't realize that.
So gum
is microplastics in it.
It's a big source of microplastics.
I knew it before you even said it, dude.
It's source of microplastics.
Why?
The manufacturing process of making the gum.
Just not regulated.
Each piece of gum has between 100 to 1,000 microplastics.
Dude, is there anything that's safe?
We're slowly turning into plastic.
Well, I mean, you're right. I mean, the manufacturing process, remember, these are machines and stuff, packaging. Little tiny microplastic pieces will go into, you know, bottled water or whatever, things that you're ingesting all the time, or even, you know, things that you put in your mouth that you got to make sure you wash or whatever. So you're chewing on gum all the time. I mean, you have 5 pieces a day. It's like 5,000 pieces a day of these microplastics that you're probably ingesting on a daily basis.
So something like that pop or the information like that comes out, I imagine it opens the opportunity for somebody to create
like microplastic free gum.
Yeah. Like safer. Is there not something like that exists already? Has not somebody made
to look that up?
Yeah. It comes to you in a glass container.
How did you even find that? Were you just reading
an study?
Article? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a study it's making waves.
It seems like we're studying a lot of that right now. It feels like,
you know why we were totally unaware.
Yeah.
We were totally unaware, and now they're looking and they're like, oh, cool. Everywhere.
You know, it's another.
Everything is structured around it. I mean, it's been so convenient for sterile products and environments. Like, but again, we didn't know the harm, you know, down the road.
And it accumulates in your brain.
You know, another bad one. I was actually just thinking about this because I was guilty of this up until relatively recent. I was chopping up my butcher box meat, getting ready to grill. And I used like wood things, but a lot of people use those plastic ones.
Oh, that'll do it.
And when you cut on those cutting boards,
tiny plastic. Oh yeah.
I mean, you could actually, and you look at them, you could see it.
Oh yeah.
And so I used to have those, and so I used to use those because they're really easy to clean. You can throw them in the dishwasher.
That's
like
right.
So they're like super functional. But when you actually think about it, and I don't know why that never does, because again, we weren't talking about it very much.
I never thought of it.
Yeah, I didn't. It didn't really cross my mind.
Microplastics are so small, like you don't see them.
Easier to wash, you know? So people like the convenience of it. But, and I went back to the wood.
See, so there already is gum.
Oh, so there are top plastic-free, non-toxic gum brands. So they have them. They do have them. How do they guarantee there's no microplastics in them?
Well, I think it starts with not using plastic in the process.
Okay.
I'm sure. Right. That's expensive. Why I was wondering, like, in gum, I have no idea. Like,
actually, they put plastics packaging in gum. It appears to be.
Yeah.
Like polymers and things like
that. Oh my God.
Yeah.
So they were intentionally.
So it's not an accident.
Yeah. It's not an accident.
Well, that's why I was like, how do you accidentally do that? But it.
Wow. Really, Doug? Is that what it says?
It does say
makes
that.
Makes it more pliable. That's like crazy.
Yes. BHT. Let's see.
Here you go.
Let me see.
Hey guys, you want some estrogen? That's wild. You know what?
Yeah. So conventional gum often includes plastic polymers like polyethylene and polysorbutylene.
So that's what it is.
Which are synthetic compounds derived from petroleum.
It's actually put in the gum intentionally.
Cool.
That's awesome.
You know why? Because they weren't told they couldn't.
Yeah.
So they'll do what they can.
Well, and like anything else, all those things are, you know, the dosage that has to show any harmful that has to be ridiculous. So, it's okay, no big deal. Yeah.
Do you guys remember? I don't know why I'm thinking of this. Do you guys? This is like the worst Halloween treat, or I don't even know why anybody even like what the point is. You ever have like you ever eat those wax lips or wax?
Yeah.
What are you supposed to do with those? People chew on it.
You eat them.
I have no idea.
And swallow it.
I think so.
Did you do that?
I'm sure I did.
You chewed on it?
Sure I did.
Wax?
I don't remember if I swallowed it or what.
I tried it one. I'm like, who would do this?
Yeah, I'm pretty
Are
sure
you supposed to chew on wax?
Doug, I have no idea.
That's your generation, Doug. That's like the first.
I was never big into wax lips. Okay. For the record.
Yeah.
That's like an old school can. You know what I mean?
I know. I remember. They have other versions of it too. They had ones that they had like these ones that look like little soda pops that had and you just eat the whole thing.
I ate
the whole thing.
I bit off the lid, drank it.
Huh? Yeah, I ate the whole thing.
Did you? Yeah. Really? I don't think you're supposed to. Look it up. That's like legit. There they are. Look. See? Are you supposed to just eat them?
I do not know.
Why don't you type in, are you supposed to eat them or chew them? Well, that's what I want to know.
To make them edible.
Because, I mean, if they tasted good, I would have done it, but they didn't taste good, so I never understood.
They were, they didn't really taste like anything.
Cherry.
No, you don't eat the wax lips entirely. Well, they're designed to be chewed like gum to extract the sugary sweetness and flavor. Then the wax is discarded. While the wax is made from food grade paraffin and is generally considered safe. You know, when they say generally, that means not. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That means it's not.
It's like not recommended per se.
Yeah. It's not going to kill you right away.
I looked something up. I wanted to do.
Oh, wait, no, real quick. I got to ask you about the butcher box. You mentioned butcher box.
Oh,
the box that we have.
Yes.
You said you found it hella easy.
All you have to do is do Mind Pump Butcher Box. And I think it's actually the second highest search thing that pops up. And you can see the box that was created for us by us, right? So we put together all of our personal favorites that we tend to order on a regular basis from there. Butcher Box comprised a single box that someone can order.
The ones that we like the most.
Yeah, yeah.
What are the cuts in there?
Chicken thighs, the tips, the
flank.
Yeah, so we got ribeyes, bone-in chicken thighs, premium steak tips, baby back ribs, gluten-free chicken nuggets, and flat iron steaks.
Flat iron, that's what I meant.
Yeah.
Steak tips.
Those chicken nuggets.
By the way,
what?
paraffin wax, just to answer that question, that is a petroleum-based product.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
From, you know what sucks?
What isn't?
You know, I know. You know what sucks about petroleum? Because people are like, oh, oil. It's like used in everything. If you look at the human population and you put it up against the chart, so the growth of human population, and you chart it and you put it up against a chart of when we started to use petroleum for things like medicines and containers and engines and stuff like that.
Sweetener.
It is why the human population was able to grow. Without petroleum, we would not have the energy or the products that we have now that support this growing population. So it's this really crazy conundrum.
Damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah, like if you got rid of petroleum right now.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Like, you would have billions of people dying.
Is crucial for a sterile environment in the medical community.
Absolutely.
You know, like you get rid of that and it looks kind of crazy.
So what do you do?
I don't know.
So I was watching last night with Katrina, one of my all-time favorite sitcoms. I won't share what it is because it'll give away one of these. So I'm watching it. It's a way older show. It goes all the way back to when I was in high school, and was just, I can still watch reruns and I still crack up. Okay. So it made me go like, you know what? What are like the most, what are the 10 most iconic, memorable characters from some of the most famous sitcoms that you guys can think of? And gotcha. So I want to hear you guys. I'm going to see of 10, like I did the top 10 and listed all of them. I don't necessarily think if I agree with all of them, but
let me
definitely
see if I get some.
Yeah. See, I want to see.
So if you guys, how far back does it go? Are we going all 70s time? Or are we going like up to?
It's pretty all time because there's, I'll tell you this. There's only one or two, or there's one that goes really far back. There's two that go pretty far back.
Okay.
But all the rest
I'd
were.
I'd say the furthest for I could think of for like 50s would be like Lucille Ball.
That's one.
Oh, good job.
Good guess.
I would,
the furthest back right here that I
was going to say one of the characters from Leave It to Beaver. I would have said would have been the other one, but Lucille Ball is the one. I bet you
Gilligan.
I bet you have Homer Simpson. Do they count cartoons?
Oh no, they didn't count cartoons. So then, that would have been a good guess.
It had to be. That's the longest running series.
It's gonna be Dwight from The Office.
Ooh, okay. So Office is, but it didn't go down. This is the part where
not have Dwight. He's the most iconic.
They say he's not. You know who they pick from there?
What?
Stanley.
No way.
They say they put him as that. So if you guess the show, but you don't guess the right character, I'll give you because right. That was I guessed the show on the wrong.
You have Al Bundy.
Al Bundy is number two.
Kramer.
So I thought Kramer too. This is what made me. I'm watching Seinfeld. That's one of my. That's my all time favorite.
George.
Show. George is iconic. And I'm like, okay, I can because George has a bigger role.
Memorable. Yeah.
And he's very.
How about Three's Company?
Nope.
Wow.
Nope.
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
Let me think. Who else? What's his name from The Cosby Show? Dad.
Oh, no.
He's not on there?
No, it's not very I feel like he's not that iconic.
He was on the list. They took him off. They found out.
What was his name?
Doug, you have any guesses?
I don't know. Frasier?
Kid Dynamite? So Frasier is Niles from Frasier.
Yeah, Niles.
Okay. Yeah, Niles from Frasier.
I never watched that.
I didn't either, but that's boring. Another great. Here's one that I should.
Anybody from Cheers?
No Cheers characters.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So one I don't know that I would have never got is from MASH because I didn't watch MASH.
I was going to say MASH.
Charles from MASH is on there.
Was that the
Alex Presser? From Family Ties is on there.
Oh yeah.
Okay. And then Ron from Parks and Rec.
Oh, okay.
So you guys should have got that. Yeah, and then Barney Stinson from How I Met Your Mother.
Okay.
So those were the ones. And then
you know what I hated about MASH? MASH came on. When MASH came on, I knew the TV shows I liked.
The cartoons were over.
Yeah. Every time.
All the cartoons were over. Oh, yeah. It came on after cartoons.
I hated that.
I was like, oh, guys, it's depressing. I'm out.
It came on.
I'm going to go play outside.
I don't remember what was on before, but you're right. It was like there's like two or three like cartoons you would watch before. And then
there were MASH two things also that would come on that meant cartoon time was over. It was either MASH or it was Soul Train.
Soul Train.
On the weekend. Soul Train was the weekend cartoon.
And I would watch it for a little bit because you'd see some wild
things. Isn't it crazy to think that kids have unfettered access to cartoons
whenever they want
24/7 like that? It makes me wonder that if we did, how
you know how funny it is.
Nothing is scheduled for them. You know, isn't that weird?
You know, hey, speaking of that, I've cut out the iPad completely.
Good.
The only thing we use it for right now is his Legos to build his Legos. We have some school stuff that he does on it. But I switched. I was watching something. It was actually the guy who is the guy that wrote Coddling of the American Mind. And then he also, we watched him speak at the ARC event. Author. He's also like,
Doug's finding it right now for you.
Yeah. You know who I'm talking about, Doug?
I do.
Jonathan Haidt. Jonathan Haidt.
Yeah, there you go.
So he wrote another, he's the one that's, he's been studying this for some time. And he was talking about that that cartoons and television for our kids are not as bad as you think. It's the way they consume them on the iPad, because the iPad is so all consuming and the types of cartoons they're watching.
It's cut.
Watching a cartoon with your kid is not on a television is not that bad. And so he was explaining the difference of that. And so I've just committed to that with my son, is that if and when he wants,
you watch together,
we put on the TV. What I've noticed is really interesting is he doesn't even really, he ends up playing with his Legos and he'll check back. He'll hear a part he remembers and then you'll see him watch it for like 2 or 3 minutes and he'll go back to building.
So you end up watching the cartoon?
Yeah. So yeah. I end up watching more of the cartoon than he does. And I'm like, okay, I can already see a difference between the two. And it took about a week to wean him off completely, because he'd asked for
it. I have
an
app for you that you might want to check out that my wife found. It's called Minnow, MINNOW. It's all Christian-based cartoons for kids. And so she goes through, my wife is like very, like she's got a very, very fine filter for content for the kids.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, they've got great content.
Is this on the iPad or is this on?
You can put it on, it's an app, so you can put it on.
Yeah, I don't want to use the iPad at all, because I don't want him staring at a screen by himself. Right.
You can put it on your TV.
So, but I don't mind regular old. We watch a lot of old 80s, 90s. My son loves the 1950s Mickey Mouse. Yeah. Like, and so I just, if he.
Some cartoons, though, from back in the day. Have you watched, like, Tom and Jerry with your kids?
Yeah, oh, some of it's bad.
Well, that was always great, because they go to the grandparents and they're playing Tom and Jerry and they're playing, like, Looney Tunes. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, we got wild.
I've also been practicing that. I shared it with you guys yesterday, and I'll share it with the YouTube team so they can play it in the clip, because I'm probably going to mess it up a little bit. And I think it was interesting. The power of not saying no to your kid.
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool about, so basically the strategy is when your kid asks for something, instead of just going no right away and putting them in that like defensive, place right away and them reacting, is saying, after you do this and this, ask me.
Yeah. Or how about you ask me after you finish this thing?
Yeah. So instead of just saying, no, you can't watch cartoons or what that, say, hey, after you clean your room and do your homework, ask me again. And then I'll let you. And what that does is it takes them from getting defensive right away, because they don't have that same ability to be able to control those emotions that way. And they feel heard. And then they go, okay, well, and then it also attaches some sort of like, work or something in order to receive that. So like delayed gratification type of strategy.
It's a delayed gratification.
And it's I've already done it a few times with him asking for something like simple like that. And where I just be like, no, not right now. It would be the natural like thing. It's like, oh, you know what? I'm not going to say no right now. I'm going to say, hey, well, after we eat and do your homework, then ask me. Yeah. And then daddy will figure, you know, and then we'll figure something out. And it's pretty cool to watch the difference.
It's funny, because
as long as you don't say circle back, we're going to circle back.
I hate that.
I don't know why that's so annoying.
That manager it's funny when you go to a hotel and you watch, you put cartoons on or something for your kids and a commercial comes on. My kids are like, fast forward. You can't. What do you mean you can't? This is how we watched TV back in the day. You just had to sit and watch the commercial. This is what's happening.
Yeah.
I got some, I pulled up some great information on some lesser known cannabinoids and their effects on the body. A lot of people know CBD by now. A lot of people know obviously what THC does, blah, blah, blah. But there are other cannabinoids, and there's more and more studies coming out about them, which is pretty cool. So I'll tell you guys about a few of them. CBG is they call it the mother cannabinoid, because it's a precursor to both THC and CBD. But on its own, it has some neuronal protective effects. So it protects neurons, and it reduces neuroinflammation. And in Huntington models, so people with Huntington's disease, it seems to improve motor function. It also reduces inflammation in conditions like irritable bowel disease, and it has some pain relief effects, which is kind of cool. Then there's CBN. This is the one, which, by the way, you're starting to see things getting marketed with CBN, because it's good for sedation. So for sleep, so people who like, for example, people who use the Ned product, the sleep one.
Yeah,
it's higher in CBN.
Okay,
that's one of the reasons why you'll take it and feel like, oh, I want to go.
One of my favorite products of theirs.
It's also good for muscle and joint pain, and they're showing it in animal models with pain like fibromyalgia, and then there's CBC, which is really good apparently for the gut. For gut health.
Now, Sal, how does Ned do this, since they have all these different products that are, you know, want stress or for sleep,
yep,
and they're a full spectrum based. Yep. Do they just put a their full spectrum and then they put a higher dose of CBN, or they put it in order for it to then?
There's different. So you can breed hemp plants like you do with marijuana plants. Yeah, I know that. So you can have some that are higher in CBC, CBN, CBG. And then what Ned does is they add botanicals that are not hemp related that contribute to the desired effect. So the sleep one will have certain compounds in there that also encourage better sleep.
Okay. Like valerian. So in other words, they're all full spectrum, yes, but then they add things to those products to encourage whatever you're looking for.
That's right.
Okay. That makes sense. Because you've already communicated many times that ideally you want full spectrum always.
Yes. So it's not just CBN, by the way. You get a Ned product.
Right.
It may have more CBN, but it's always full spectrum, because in all the studies, regardless of the cannabinoid and the effects, it works better in the presence of other cannabinoids. They call it the entourage effect in that scientific space. So,
yeah.
So that's what happens.
Got it.
Yeah, before we stop here, we are looking for trainers.
Oh,
that's right.
Thank you, Doug.
Yeah.
We're hiring trainers.
Yes.
This, we do not put this call out very often because we're very picky over who can work here, over who can train. They represent us the most. So a good trainer would represent us well. A bad trainer would be a travesty. However, we are opening, and there is a process, so it's not easy to work here. So if you're dedicated, you like Mind Pump, you want to help people, and you think you can make it through, if you feel like you're the kind of person that can make it through the testing that we do in the internship, I'll tell you this, you'll be successful, because all of our trainers do amazing things, but it is not easy. You go to mindpumppersonaltraining.com/apply. So mindpumppersonaltraining.com/apply.
I do want you to know, though, this is in person. So this is not remote personal training.
You gotta
for
be
us.
Here.
You have to be, and you don't, I mean, we have most trainers we all have here now have relocated. They live somewhere else. You can live somewhere else and then but you have to be here. So it's in person. And I would say that if you're wondering too, like what's experience or certification, we're looking for character over we are the amount of certifications and experience.
You could be
a
totally, one of our most successful trainers was a police officer over
that's
six
right.
months ago.
That's right. Marcelo, not even a half a year ago, he's our top trainer and killing it, and was a police officer. And so, but he's been trained by us. And so he's gone through all of our courses. He's listened to all of our stuff. And so, I'll take that character over somebody who, you know, applies. I've got 10 years experience and 7 national certifications and
don't
a degree.
Come here with an ego, because you'll get kicked out right away. Yeah. If you eat a high protein diet, but you notice some digestive distress, try digestive enzymes, but not just any digestive enzymes. Go with MassZymes. This is the digestive enzymes for people who love fitness, and they really work. They help you digest where you're eating better, less bloat. You also get those amino acids to your muscles in a more effective way. Go to masszymes.com. That's MASSZYMES.com/mindpump. Use the code mindpump10 for 10% off any order. Back to the show.
Our first caller is Zoe from New York.
Zoe, what's happening?
Hello, hello.
Hey, what's up, guys?
How are you?
How's it going?
Good. It's nice to see you guys again. I was on, I think, like a few months ago. I have another question for you guys. So I'm a competitive power lifter. And I just competed, I think like a week or two ago now, and I'm currently kind of in between weight classes. So I'm in the 65 kg weight class. However, I'm weighing in at like 61 kg. So I'm really low. I only made it in by 1 kilogram. And it's kind of working against me. The other women I was competing against were like basically 10 pounds heavier than me, because they were way higher in that weight class. So my question is should I try to cut and get into the 60 kg weight class? Or should I bulk, try to get higher and build more strength in that, in the weight class I'm currently in? Or should I just like accept it and like be where I'm at for right now?
What a great question. Yeah. And if I remember you were really strong last time we talked to you. You guys, what were your lifts on this last competition?
What was that?
What did you hit? What were your numbers?
So it wasn't my best competition, but I did do a PR for my squat. I got 270 pounds, which I was really happy with.
Wow.
I got for my bench press, I got, I think, 140 pounds. And then for the deadlift, that's where I kind of messed up. I just had an off day and I only got to 280 pounds. I tried 300 or 303 twice and it just wasn't my day for that. So,
man, you're strong. Okay. Yeah. So this is a really good question because it's actually quite nuanced. It depends on who I'm talking to. It depends on what's going on with them. You know, how serious they are about powerlifting versus
where you feel best.
Yeah. Their health and where they feel best type of deal. Is this like a, this seems like a very serious sport for you. Like you really are trying to pursue. Okay. And how long have you been training for?
Well, I've been working out for like 6-7 years now. I'm only 19 currently. I turned 20 in February and, but for powerlifting, it's really been like about 2 years.
Okay. And how tall are you?
I'm 5'5".
So you're 5'5" and you weighed in at 134 pounds, basically.
Yeah.
Okay. And so you're pretty lean.
I'm pretty lean. I took a body fat test percentage thing. It's like the one where like you hold your arms out.
Yeah,
I don't
know
how accurate it is. It said I was around 19% body fat.
Yeah.
I don't really know how accurate that would be. But.
You are lean at that body weight and height and being as strong as you are.
It would serve her to go up.
Yeah. So, and then are you healthy otherwise? Like you have a normal cycle, all that stuff, the signs that show that you're doing good with your health?
Yeah, that actually, I'm with a hormone specialist now because I was having issues with that a while back, but now it's totally normal. Everything seems really healthy.
Okay,
so.
Go up.
Yeah.
Yeah, go Sounds up. Because like of your age, your experience, how lean you are, it would probably be healthier if you go up. The only reason I would tell someone like you, after all these questions I asked you, to not go up would be if you're like...
High body fat.
High body fat, poor health, joint pain, or... I can't eat more. It's really hard for me to eat more. I'm stuffing myself, in which case I'd say, okay, how is eating for you, by the way? Do you feel like, I could eat more. I could definitely go up in weight.
I always feel like I can eat more. I eat like mostly whole foods and I'm like just always hungry. It's ridiculous.
Oh, have fun. Go
Perfect.
Up.
I know. It's,
Get
it's
strong.
There for you.
Get strong. Go up. Let your body fat go up.
I weighed in pretty heavy. This was not when I was powerlifting. I was just training. I was like around 140 something pounds. And that was like pretty heavy for me. I didn't feel great, but at that time I also was eating gluten. I found out I have a gluten intolerance. I took a test. And so I cut out gluten and that's the only change I made. And I dropped like 10 pounds.
That's water, water and inflammation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Stay away from gluten. Stay away from gluten. It's not going to make you stronger. It'll take away.
Definitely not. No.
Yeah. No, go up, build and go up and let your body fat percentage get up to the low to mid 20s. Which is probably where you're going to feel the strongest.
Yeah,
it's probably really where we're going to see your best numbers. And that'll put you right in that category of 65 kg. So go for it.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. I think that's, and I don't track my calories at all. I kind of track protein just to make sure I get enough and I'm way above what I'm supposed to be eating. But I think my other question would just be like, in terms of trying to bulk and put on more muscle, and more strength. Is it okay to continue not to count calories?
Yeah, you're fine. Just add a meal.
There you go. Okay. Just, exactly what Adam said.
Just add a meal. So do what you always do, but they go, now every day I'm going to add this one meal.
Yeah, so whatever your regular cadence is, breakfast, lunch, dinner, you know, post-workout, throw an extra meal in there, make it like a 400-calorie meal or something, you know, with some substance, and that's it.
And definitely feed. Like, if you're hungry, feed yourself. Like, and this is the time to, you know, take advantage of that. The fact that you do have an appetite and you seem hungry, don't find yourself restricting. If you're hungry, just make good choices, feed yourself, you know?
Okay. All right. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you, guys. I sent a video over just before I hopped on of the 270 pound squat.
Dude, we'll play that on.
Yeah, we'll link it on here for sure.
Yeah, great job, by the way, especially at your age and what you're doing. And the only thing I would tell you, the only advice I could give someone, because you're doing great, is to mind your mobility. You're really strong, and for your size, you're really strong. And so be careful with your mobility because you're going to keep you haven't even hit your peak of strength. And so injuries become a real challenge as you start to get stronger.
Occasional
stronger.
Unilateral type of training will do you well.
Yeah, because you're going to want to chase those numbers and you'll get those numbers, but an injury sucks. So that's the only thing I would tell you.
Yeah. All right. Sounds good. And you guys, last time you sent me over Maps Prime Pro, and I've really enjoyed that. And yeah, I've been doing that with, I'm a personal trainer as well, so I've been doing that with some of my clients, and it's been super helpful. So I appreciate it.
Awesome.
Great job.
All right, Zoe.
All right.
Thank you, Zoe. Awesome.
Thank you guys so much.
You got it. That's great.
She's doing good.
I know.
She says she's a personal trainer too.
She is. Yeah, she is.
Yeah.
I mean, that she's really strong. And you know, people listening, like whether you should go up or down in weight class, the main factors to consider are health and how serious you are about competition. Because when you get really serious about competition, at a certain point, it is a trade off.
Yeah, you are making sacrifices.
You are sacrificing health to compete at some of the highest levels, but she's at this great place where she doesn't have to sacrifice health. In fact, going up in weight is also good for her.
Yeah, I'll probably be healthier for her.
That's right.
The fact that she mentioned that she had lost her or been dealing with losing her period before, it was probably due to her being lean, considering
too lean
where she's at.
That's right.
And so,
and 19% is it's probably too lean for max strength. I mean, that's a really lean body fat. It could be kind of healthy. But for a woman powerlifting, and for women in general, typically it's low 20s where you'll see best health.
Yep.
Our next caller is Carlos from Texas.
What's up, man?
What's up, Carlos?
How you doing, Carlos?
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Good, man.
Good. How can we help you?
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you for all of your knowledge that you give all of us. And it's an honor and a pleasure to be on the show with you again. So awesome. Thank you.
Right on.
Yeah, dude.
I have several of your programs, and currently I'm running Powerlift. And I'm not preparing for a meet or anything like that, so I have plenty of time. I know that your program runs on a 7-day schedule, but at the age of 58, I realize that I need more recovery time and I need more just rest. So am I doing myself any harm by extending that 7-day program to like a 9-day program or even a 10-day program?
Great.
4 days, you run 2 days, rest, 2 days, and then rest. What I'm doing is I'm running day one and rest, day two, rest, day three, rest, day four.
I love it.
Rest, yeah. Rest.
I love it.
So that comes out to 9 days.
Super intuitive.
So
yeah.
I love it.
That's fine.
I love it.
That's perfect. There's two ways that you would, I'm so glad that you're, modifying it to fit your needs. That's what everybody should do.
Yep.
There's two ways you could look at this. One is to reduce the volume. Actually, three ways. Reduce the volume, reduce the intensity, or spread out.
Extend the rest.
Extend the days in between. And to be honest with you, I kind of like what you're doing the most.
I love that.
Yep.
So go for it.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Good. I appreciate that. And I just want to let some of your callers know, or some of your viewers know, that my daughter, I bought Starter for my daughter. I'm a poet and I know it. she was trying to do some programs, and not even programs. She was just trying to do kind of her own thing. And about 2 weeks into it, she called me. She goes, "Dad, I really, really enjoy running the program." She doesn't have to think about it. She just does what's in the program. So if there's anybody on the fence out there wanting, some advice on whether they should buy your program or not, I say go for it. Just buy a program, run it as it is, and then you can modify it afterwards. But yeah, I really enjoy it, and she really enjoys it too.
Appreciate it's working.
That's
for
great,
it.
Man. Appreciate that, yeah. Carlos.
Yeah. Hey, I do have one quick question. My goal right now is to get to a 315 deadlift. At the end of your program, if I don't reach that goal, what do you suggest me running after that? Should I run powerlift again? Is there a different program that I should run? What are your suggestions?
I would either go, so there's two, you could run powerlift
again.
You could
do it again.
But if you really want to really do it right, avoid injury, that kind of stuff, you can go powerlift symmetry powerlift or powerlift MAPS 15 performance powerlift. So those would be both good options that would kind of maintain stability, you know, your joint integrity, and then go back into powerlifting.
Yeah, you might like the 15 protocol, given that, you know, the rest is yep. an issue. Like, that might actually like resolve that for you.
Yeah, so 15 performance okay. would be a great way. Do you have that program, by the way?
I don't. I have almost every other program, but I don't have that.
We'll send it to you.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You got it, man. Right on, thanks for calling in.
All right. Hey, I appreciate all y'all do. Thank you very much.
Take care, man.
Yeah, he brings up a great point that every workout program is designed around the 7-day week. And I get it. It's mm-hmm. because 7-day calendar, you have your work days, you have your weekends. It's able to, you know, you could schedule the workout so that every week it looks the same and it works in your schedule. So that, I don't want to dismiss that. I think it's a big deal. But for people who have the flexibility, I mean, bodybuilders have done this for a long time where they don't follow a 7-day schedule. They do like a 2-on, 1-off, you know, or 3-on.
Listen
one,
to your body. Off. It's, I mean, it all revolves yes. around that. It that's sounds right. like he's really kind of honing in on that, which that's is right. good.
Our next caller is Ben from Minnesota.
Ben, what's happening?
Come on, what's Ben? Up, dude?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
You got it. How can we help you?
Well, in your 3-episode bonus series that you did for trainers, you talked about the importance of doing an assessment to kind of show your credibility, help close the sale, you know, when you're kind of having that initial assessment with a client. I'm wondering, if I'm structuring my coaching business completely remotely, how could I incorporate some sort of virtual session? I kind of feel like it's tough to actually see all the angles and notice, you know, minor shifts or imbalances when you're just looking through somebody's camera, but I do feel like it's a really important part to have. So I'm just curious if I should take them through the assessment and just try and watch what I can through the camera, or if there's a better way to approach it.
Really good question. Yeah. And one of the reasons why we really recommend people to start training in person first, because this is difficult anyways, right? So learning how to assess somebody and see movement like that is already, you know, takes time, takes practice to get really good at it, to see all the nuances. And then to do that on a virtual setting, you just that it's just that much more difficult.
Have you trained in person before doing online? Do you have experience doing both?
Yeah. So I've been a personal trainer for about 4 years. You know, I did it via gym, and then now I do some awesome. group training
good.
Stuff.
Good. So here's how I would do it. And there, by the way, are you going to attend the webinar? Because in the webinar, I'm going to be covering questions that you could do virtually that you can make a part of your assessment. And I know it's about sales, but it's going to be very relevant to what you're asking.
I'm not currently signed up for it. That's like next week in June or something, right?
Yeah, get on there, because I'm going to get into detail, but I'll give you some of the cliff notes. So number one, when you're getting on a call, have them send you pictures of them from the front, side, and back, and have them send you a video of a squat front and back. And you can do a couple other things if you want. And what you would do is you would screenshot whenever you notice the deviation, and you would circle it on the picture, and you send it back to them. And you say, hey, you know, I noticed how this is happening here. Let me tell you what's happening. By the way, do you ever feel pain in this area? Yes, I do. Okay, there's a couple things we can do to correct that through exercise. And you can explain it and say, do you see how that would work for you? So that's one way to do it. The second thing is, a lot of the assessment you do virtually is really about asking them questions about their fitness history, asking them questions about how much time they have that they can devote to exercise and diet, and their diet history. And what you're doing with that is you're kind of revealing the client to themselves. So I'll give you a great example, okay? A good example would be, you know, what you could do in your assessment would be, hey, on a scale of 1 to 10, how serious are you about accomplishing the goals that you told me about? 1 being, I don't care at all. 10 being, I definitely want to do this. And then you let them pick. Now, 99% of people, once you kind of set that structure, all those parameters, are going to say, anywhere between 8, 9, or 10. Like, nobody's going to get a call with you if they don't care, right? They're obviously, but you have to define what a 10 means. And a 10 just means, I really want to do something about this. Not like, I'm going to work out 7 days a week. And so when they send that to you, the reason why it's really important is because once they've told you that they're very serious about accomplishing this goal, what's less likely to come up later is, well, let me think about this and see if this is something I want to do. And so you're getting ahead of the potential objections before they pop up. That's what these kind of questioning looks like. So the main gist of an assessment for someone like you virtually is to communicate your value in a way that makes sense to them, not to communicate how smart you are or communicate that you know things, but rather, is there a way I can communicate to this person where they're going to see it's valuable to work with me. And a lot of what you're doing virtually is diet. Most of what you do virtually is support and diet. So the questions might look something like this, like, what are the sticking points for you when you try to get on a diet? At what point do you find that you fail? What does it look like when you fail? Do you tend to go way off the diet, or is a little off and then you kind of go off, you know, go back on? And then when they answer those questions, then you would go back to it and say, you know, a lot of people experience that. Right around week six is when people tend to fail on it. And when they fail, they tend to quit. And here's what I found. And you explain how you in the past have coached people through those problems. And then you followed up by saying, can you see how that might help you? And they're going to say, yeah. And all you're doing is communicating your value. Why would they work with you versus when they've tried to do it on their own? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, absolutely. And that sounds awesome, because most of the clients that I'm working with have a pretty general idea of what they're doing with the weights. So yeah, the big, you know, thing that I'm providing them is, you know, that accountability. They have a good idea of what they should be doing. It's just, you know, a matter of actually doing it. And yeah, talking through diet is, you know, kind of always the biggest thing that I'm doing with them. So,
right. And so communicating accountability, a crappy way of doing it would be to say, yeah, it's really great to work with a coach because it keeps you accountable. And you know, you might get some people that are say, yeah, I need that. And other people are like, what does that mean? A better way of communicating that is going to be something like this. Once you get some questions, you ask them some questions and they reveal to you that, yeah, when I try doing diets, I gain the weight back, or I find it really difficult. And you say, you know, what I found with people is, first off, everybody goes off their diet. There isn't a single person I've ever worked with that is perfect right out the gates. Nobody is. Here's the challenge that they run into. When they go off a diet, they go as far away from eating healthy as they possibly can. And here's what I found. To them, it feels like rebellion. Why does it feel like rebellion? Because they feel ashamed that they failed. And this is how I've coached people through that process. And then you explain those scenarios in which you've experienced this with your clients and how you've helped them. And what you've done now is you've communicated accountability in a real, applicable, valuable way. So, what I would do if I was, I would think about all these scenarios and put them together, create yourself a script, practice, and then gear questions that'll direct them towards these conversations. Does that make sense?
Yeah, all sounds awesome.
So, Ben, let me share with you what I used to do when I was doing virtual coaching. So it was automated. I had an intake form that, let's say you were interested in the free consultation, you would input your email information, and then I had an automated email questionnaire that got sent back to you of all the types of questions Sal's talking about right now. So they have all that information. And then on top of that, I'd have them send me a video from the front side and back of them squatting. Now, this was before we had created MAPS Prime, and so that was what I was doing. Today, I would probably send them the MAPS Prime Zone 1, Zone 2, Zone 3 and do the same thing, so I have all of that. That way, when we have our free consultation, I have this entire intake form of all these questions that they've answered for me. So I'm getting a really good idea of their commitment level, how serious, have they trained before, what are they looking to do, aches, pains, medications, you name it, all the good stuff. Then I also have these three videos of them doing a windmill, a squat, and a wall test. And so I can be prepared before they even come on the call with me of like who this person is. Like, okay, I see that they've had a trainer in the past, that they didn't have a good experience. I see that they're a 10 level of seriousness on getting fit this time. I see that they want to not only lose about 15 pounds of fat, they also like to build muscle. I also see that they failed zone 1 and zone 2 miserably. And so then I get on the call and I've got all this great information to present to them that what I've learned about them. And then I never closed on the very first consultation. I then, after that, after giving all this value about how their movement is and where they need to work on these things and getting questioning them and talking, having more conversation about their goals, I would then give them a challenge for the next week for our next call. Again, still haven't sold anything yet. I'm just like, so now the next step is to see what you're going to need to do nutritionally. So I want you to track your food for the next week. And I would give them, I'd tell them to download Fat Secret or MyFitnessPal. And then I wanted them to track all their food. And the reason why is because I don't just write a generic diet for you. I'm going to teach you how to make modifications to your current nutrition, how you're eating now. Just a great way to show more value, that you care, that you're trying to, you're not just giving them some generic meal plan that everybody gets. I'm really diving into your nutrition. It also it weeds out all the people that are not serious. If they're not willing to commit to 1 week of documenting for your free time, they're most likely not going to be somebody who's going to pay you a bunch of money for the next 6 months to personal train you. So the people that were not serious, didn't follow through, didn't do those little steps, that's not the client I want anyway. So I'm already moving on to the next person. The people that did take it serious and very valuable that I spent that extra hour with them, now they come with all their nutrition stuff. And then by that time, I've started to wrap my brain around what I'm going to present to this person. And so that's what my process looked like for online coaching.
I mean, that's pretty much the angle I was going to go. In terms of logistics, what you set up ahead of time, making templates for yourself for all these with really in detail description of what you're looking for from these videos. So at least when they send the videos, they have a good idea of, you know, you can make sure you get the feet in there, you know, from the side. And then if you know, you could have like sort of a disclaimer at the bottom too, if you didn't accomplish these videos, like we can do this and I can actually assess, like, and I can watch you do this in the assessment. So at least you give them a chance to be able to kind of assess them from afar. But the best way to do that obviously is to get it ahead of time. So that way too, you already have that information. So you can just kind of go through that with them. And it'd be a lot more of effective conversation.
This is also how I would use our community, right? So if you're in our trainer forum with all these great other trainers and movement specialists, and I'm still getting better at this, my skill set, I've got these videos, I can now refer to all my peers and be like, hey, I just had this guy do a squat assessment. I see this going on and this going on. Do you guys see anything else going on? I'm going to use my community, dude. I'm going to be like, let's see if so I can get coached and help from my peers that are even better than I am at this, and then hear the feedback. And so then because I got a whole week till I see him again. So now I come with all this great information that I either saw already or I learned from people that are even better than I am at my craft. And then I'm like presenting to them like a full detail of what I see with their movement, and then presenting them what we're going to do program wise for the next 3, 6, 9 months, and the things that we're going to be addressing both nutritionally and movement and goal wise. Like that's what it looks like.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. That all sounds excellent. I should join that trainer forum.
Yes, you should. You should be in the trainer forum. You should definitely come to the webinar. Also, webinar will be a good time to come on there, because anytime we do a webinar, we do offers that are, it's a better deal to get at that time. So show up to the webinar. And we'll drop some more.
It's a rad community. You need to be in there.
Trainerwebinar.com. Get on there.
Trainerwebinar.com. Awesome. Thank you so much, guys.
If I don't see you, Ben, I'm going to get mad, okay?
Yeah. I'll be there.
All right, Ben. All right, Ben. Good luck, man. Yep.
Take care.
Yeah, I love questions from all these. We're getting more and more questions from trainers, which is really good. Often we get messages from trainers talking about how flooded the space is, and it is true that the trainer coaching space is growing. It's predicted to continue growing, but good trainers are
non-existent.
And let me tell you, this is a being able to virtually coach somebody and to do what we just discussed is not easy. And so what you have is a flood of trainers that aren't real trainers getting into the space because they think there's going to be quick money and they don't even understand or grasp this concept or even know what they would start, where to start. So it really gives you an opportunity to separate yourself from all your peers because you actually do take the time to do something like
this.
And you'll blow somebody's mind when you come to a consultation, a Zoom call like this, that prepared and that ready to that well set up to communicate to them everything that's going on with them, and you have a plan laid out that there's not a lot of trainers that do that really well.
If you're listening and you're a trainer, go to trainerwebinar.com. We do them periodically, and they're totally free. And our goal is to create more good trainers, not just more trainers, more good trainers.
Our next caller is Amelia from Austria.
Hi, Amelia.
How you doing, Amelia?
What's happening?
How are you?
I'm fine. I'm so grateful. Thank you for this opportunity. I'm very, very grateful.
Yeah, I appreciate you. How can we help you?
So I'm going to read because I think otherwise I'm going to mess up. I'm a medical student and I'm slowly getting to the point where I should start having an idea of which direction I want to take. The way you have changed the fitness industry is something I truly admire, because you don't just teach health, you make it livable and real for people. I want to help people the same way you have helped me and many other listeners. So which medical specialty or career path would allow me to bring the same kind of impact to the medical world? I want to work with a holistic approach to health, where prevention, movement, and education come before medication, and where health becomes something truly accessible to everyone. With AI and other changes coming, I find it hard to know which direction will have the most meaningful full long-term impact, especially since this is actually my second career path, as I've already lost too much time by taking advice from the wrong people. And also, I wanted to ask if you could give me some advice on how I could build something along the way, because it would probably take me around 15 years until I can finally practice on my own. And I would love to build something along the way. And I don't, I mean, I have some ideas, but I don't know if these are good ones. And yeah, I would really appreciate your advice.
Oh, I know exactly. I think I know exactly where would be a good idea for you to go. So the question essentially is like, what direction should I go to be able to help people the way you've helped people in fitness, correct? Through medical though.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see a massive, massive need for more medical practitioners who are experts in female health, female hormonal health, perimenopause, menopause, but who also understand nutrition and exercise, who can help them. We have so many listeners that are women that call in and say, it is hard for me to find a doctor that understands my symptoms, how to work with them, with diet and exercise, how to work with my hormones. What does that look like? It's a growing field. It's also a place you could start right now, not as a medical practitioner, but as a fitness individual. I know you said in your question that you're in our course as a trainer. You could already start working with women on their health from that perspective and give them help with exercise and diet, but you already have some medical background, so you'll be able to direct them in the right direction of where to
but
get help.
Would you mention that, like working with a client, or would you just like coach them like as a fitness coach?
I would coach them as a fitness coach, but I would put in my bio that I'm a medical student.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
And would you grow a social media account along the way? Because my idea was that we have a very good community at our gym, and I went to the gym owner and I talked with them that I would really love to give like small educational courses, like talking about, I don't know, nutrition or why protein is very important, like the topics you mention all the time in your podcast. But I don't know, the conversation was kind of weird because I knew that his intention was kind of in a very non-holistic approach way, I would say, and it just didn't feel right. So I don't know if this is an idea I should like pursue further, because like one of my best friends, they have a hotel, and I was asking her like if I should do some small courses there, would that be a good idea, or should I just create like Instagram posts, like you always say in your course that you should create posts like with the topics like your clients are coming to you.
Yes. So I didn't know the direction Sal was going to go. I actually love the direction. I was going a different direction. I thought someone like you with your background and your interest, and you probably are familiar. Are you familiar with Dr. Cabral? And are you familiar with Dr. Brink? You have the movement specialist in Dr. Brink, and then you have the Eastern Western medicine guy in Dr. Cabral. That combining that type of knowledge and creating a profile around that. So the way I would approach it, if I'm you, is as I'm learning from Dr. Brink, I'm making posts as I learn. Like he just taught me something today about ankles, and I was blown away by some knowledge or some information around that. So that becomes a post. I share as I learn. I'm coming from that perspective. Don't try and talk to people as if you're the authority. Share as a medical student on their journey. So come from the perspective of, I just want to share my journey into health and wellness. This is what I'm inspired by. Yeah. And I hope I can help others. So that's kind of how I would position my social media, is medical student who's learning this and learning that, want to share my journey.
Yeah,
and then as you learn, and what a way to really cement that too, right? So as you learn something, one of the best things you can do is turn right around and teach it so that you'll be better familiar with it. So that's exactly what I'm doing. Every day that you learn something new in class, or every day that you learn something new from Cabral or from Dr. Brink, that becomes a post on my social media. And you're not getting worried about selling anything yet. You're not worried about if you're going to coach. It's like literally just sharing your journey and allow it to organically grow like that.
Yeah, I think number one, the most important thing you should do is talk to people in person, and then use social media as a way to add value to that, and then see what happens with the social media. But don't bank on growing your business through social media. always talk to people, talk to groups, at gyms, at hotels. That's going to serve you much more than trying to build, just focusing all your intention on social media.
And I also I created a GLP-1 guide because you are in America, you're always 5 to 7 years ahead, yeah, because the Ozempic and all the GLP-1s are getting slowly more and more popular here. So it's slowly coming. And I thought that it would be really nice to have a GLP-1 guide, how to center it around, with steps and all super of that. Valuable. But I didn't know where to push it. I was should I go to the practitioners and give it them as a small brochure and say, hey, this would be a good guide. But I mean, I'm only a student, so I don't feel I have the authority to do that. So I think it's,
Don't come from that perspective. Yeah. You don't, whether one person reads it or 1,000 people read it right now, it doesn't matter to you. All that matters right now is you're on this journey, and I think your idea, your reasoning is incredible. That's enough right there.
Yeah. And also,
and just share the process and the journey. Don't worry about getting it in the hands of hundreds of other people or lead generation, all that stuff. We're not there yet. Right now, it's just you have a passion for something. I think you have a great goal. You're around probably a lot of brilliant minds. You listen to Mind Pump. Start to formulate all that and just share the process.
Iterate. Yep. Yeah. Don't be afraid to try a lot of these ideas out and talk and show up and do those talks, regardless of the outcome. It's just going to provide you with experience. And I think that's, it's going to steer you where you need to go. So GLP-1, maybe that's the direction you go. Maybe it's what they suggested in terms of other specialty areas. You don't really know that until you start really putting it out there. You're putting the work in. So you create the guide, you create the information, and you have that available for people. And you're on this journey yourself of knowledge, and people will be attracted to that.
You also have there's perceived advantages and disadvantages from not yet being a doctor. The disadvantage is what you said. I'm not an expert professional, right? What's the advantage? I'm open-minded. I'm not a part of the system. Yep. I have an exercise background as well. So I look at things differently. So that's how I would present myself. Mm-hmm. And I do think that's an advantage. I really do. I've worked with doctors that have been doctors for decades. And then I've worked with new doctors. And you know what new doctors tend to their advantage is? They have less experience, but they're more open-minded.
Yeah.
And they tend to look in more of these other directions. But yeah, I think talking to people,
disruptor,
as a coach, as a trainer, who's also a medical student, that's how I'd present myself, and talk to people in person, that's going to teach you the most and help you with your direction. And then long-term, I'm telling you, there is a massive need for doctors who can speak to female health from a holistic perspective. And the direction I would go would be hormones, because that's where you're going to need most of the education and the credentials and the authority, but also your exercise and nutrition background is going to help so much with that. And there is a definite need for it. There's so many women who we get messages all the time.
Yeah.
Where do I go? I don't know where to go.
There's a huge need for that. There's also a huge need, like Dr. Gabriel Lyon. There's a huge need to be able to assess lean muscle tissue and create a standard for that instead of BMI and just get the general public aware that having lean muscle mass is very important for your health. So, to kind of lead that charge. And so again, there's a lot of opportunities out there, but you're going to find some kind of pull based upon what kind of information you're putting out.
Yeah. Back to what I think Justin said, I think is the most important out of everything what we said, which is I wouldn't even be trying to figure out what the need is. I'm going to share my process and journey and allow the content and the people that are engaging with it to steer where I go. Because one thing I've definitely learned in this business and many others and helping other trainers is I'm almost always wrong. So when I sit here and go I bet people need this and I bet they want that. And there's a huge need in this market. It's how about I just share and lead with giving and helping others through your process of learning and allow the engagement to steer you in the direction that is best going to serve you and your community. Instead of trying to figure out what that is, share as you learn. Because a lot of times what happens is it's the thing you weren't even thinking about. Mm-hmm. Just because you're passionate about it, you learn about it, you can communicate it well, and all of a sudden it strikes a nerve. There is a need for everything we talked about. So don't overthink that. Just provide value, give to people as you're learning, and then allow the feedback and the conversation to steer you in your content.
And because you mentioned Dr. Cabral, because I follow his content as well, and I only follow like doctors in the United States, so I don't really know how to approach it, because currently right now I'm living in a small city, like it only has 160,000 people like living here, and yeah, I don't really know, because I would love to follow someone like him around and just like get all the knowledge and just watch and learn. So what would be your advice on that? Like look for someone near around here, or like reach out to Dr. Cabral, for example, or
yeah, I mean, would love to learn. You could potentially take his, you could potentially take one of his courses and go through his mentorship programs that he has. So he's got really extensive programs that you could go through. So I recommend
you might
that.
Have people to, you know, point you towards as well. That, you know, might be a little more closer to you. But yeah, I think just starting that conversation would be
and helpful. On the trainer side, we're working on a mentorship program right now too for trainers. So that's more extensive than our course that we already have. So that's a possibility. So all of it's good. All of it's good, and more of it. Again, I wouldn't overthink it. You could literally use like watching a Cabral video or a podcast episode and take notes of things that you learned as you watched it. And then that becomes a post. You listen, you absorb. Oh my God, that was really good. I didn't know that. Let me share that. You know, hey, I just learned something new. And it's always coming from the perspective of a student. I'm a student. I'm learning. I'm trying to get better. And I'm sharing my journey. Come from that. And so share anything and everything that you learn. Don't try and narrow it down or figure, just share everything you learn. If it was interesting to you and you didn't know it and you learned it, it's probably valuable to thousands of other people too.
There you go.
You got it. Yeah. Good luck.
Stay close to us too. You know, we have the trainer webinar coming up. Are you enrolled to the? Okay. Good. Good.
Of course.
Okay.
I am.
Okay. Good.
I'll see you there.
All right. We'll see you there.
Good on
you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You got it.
Bye. Yeah. But,
you know, as she was talking, I was thinking, you know, obviously we predicting, you know, things in the future. Like, good luck with that. But she said 10 to 15 years. Which is a long time.
It is.
And I've been seeing how AI is effectively diagnosing people based off their medical history, and it's already outperforming a lot of doctors.
Bro,
I think the future of medicine, I'm going to guess.
Diagnosis.
I'm going to totally guess. Yeah. Like, this is a guess. But the value, the most valuable doctors in 10 years will be the ones that are really good at working with people, like in person. Because the diagnostics, the whole like, here's take
bro,
this, do that.
I know people that are using it like therapy, marriage counseling. Get in a fight with your husband or wife and have a disagreement, upload the conversation to ChatGPT and it break down the psychology of this is probably because you are feeling this way and like having bro, I'm serious.
That's crazy.
And it being super effective for these people. Can't get on the same page with your wife or like that. Uploads
the ultimate moderator.
Bro, yes. Yeah. Working as like a
non-biased moderator.
Yes.
It's biased.
And then
of course it's biased.
And then being the person goes like, wow, I didn't think that could be a possible, like, bro.
That's crazy though.
I mean, it's being, so it's good. So trying to predict 10, 15 years, forget
good
that.
Luck.
Just share the journey. Yeah. Share the journey as you go
work
through.
Work on what right now, what you can do.
That's right.
Look, if you like the podcast, come find us on Instagram. Justin is at Mind Pump. Justin, I'm at Mind Pump DeStefano. Adam's at Mind Pump Adam.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic. 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.
Are you ready to make a real difference? West Coast University supports that ambition. That's why they offer flexible online advanced degrees in nursing, healthcare, and business, and more, designed for working professionals like you. Imagine the possibilities. A Master of Science in Nursing? Specialize in the area you're passionate about. A Master of Health Administration? Position yourself as a leader in a rapidly evolving industry. Or perhaps a Master of Business Administration. Open doors to new opportunities. Start at westcoastuniversity.edu. WCU cannot guarantee employment.
Hi, I'm Chris Gethard, and I'm very excited to tell you about Beautiful Anonymous, a podcast where I talk to random people on the phone. I tweet out a phone number, thousands of people try to call, I talk to one of them, they stay anonymous, I can't hang up, that's all the rules. I never know what's going to happen. We get serious ones. I've talked with meth dealers on their way to prison. I've talked to people who survived mass shootings. Crazy funny ones. I talked to a guy with a goose laugh, somebody who dresses up as a pirate on the weekends. I never know what's going to happen. It's a great show. Subscribe today, Beautiful Anonymous.